Willis. On Mardi Gras, I'm the flag boy, Chopper Tule. On St. Joe, I'm the flag boy, Chopper Tule. On Super Sunday, I'm the flag boy, Chopper Tule. On Mardi Gras, I'm the flag boy, Chopper Tule. On St. Joe, I'm the flag boy, Chopper Tule. On Super Sunday, I'm the flag boy, Chopper Tule. You better run away, I'm the flag boy, Chopper Tule.
I'm the game flag. I'm the game flag. I'm the game flag, wild chopper tula. I'm the game flag, wild chopper tula. And I'm walking up the street with a lot of heat. And I'm walking up the street with a lot of heat. You know I'm walking up the street with a lot of heat. You're walking up the street with a lot of heat. You know I'm walking up the street with a lot of heat. I'm the big chief. 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 Wild chopper tula. Uptown big chief, wild chopper tula. Uptown big chief, wild chopper tula. Uptown big chief, wild chopper tula.
This is Jeremy and Abigail from Bon Bon Vivant, and you're listening to 102.3 WHIV in New Orleans, a community radio station dedicated to human rights, social justice.
And as the Dalai Lama once said, the world doesn't belong to leaders. The world belongs to all humanity. End all wars.
Let's do that.
There's always money for war. There's always money for war. Oh, oh, oh. For the tanks and the bombs and the bullets and the guns. There's always money for war. No money for the doctors. No money for the nurses or the NHS. No money for the teachers. There's no money for the people on benefits. Even if you're disabled, a young mother that's struggling to buy food, it don't matter if you're desperate. There's no money for you. There's just money for war. There's always money for war.
Radio that's exciting, unpredictable, and devoted to a peaceful, fairer planet. This is 102.3 FM, WHIV-LP New Orleans. Community radio for the city of New Orleans and all points beyond.
What's up, everybody? This is DJ Daniel Gray.
My name's Will Parody.
And y'all are tuned in to Gray Matter, only on
WHIV 102.3 FM, New Orleans Community Radio, dedicated to human rights and social justice.
And all wars. What's up, Will? How you feeling?
Man, Daniel, I'm great.
Awesome. For you guys joining us for the first time, this is Gray Matter. Gray Matter is a show displaying our love for music and current event topics.
It's basically a broadcast of our bromance.
Will and I get to flex our friendship, and we get to share the music and our opinions with you.
So join us, won't you, on Gray Matter.
Love that.
Welcome back to Gray Matter, everybody. We're going to continue with a conversation about the gentrification of New Orleans post-Hurricane Katrina, a discussion that Daniel and I are calling How New Orleans Became NOLA. Ever since I moved to New Orleans, I think that one of the most important lessons I've learned is to try and stay humble, keep my ears open, and listen to the folks that have experienced growing up in this city and what the culture means to them. Daniel's family has been here for 9 generations. If anyone can speak to how this city has changed since Hurricane Katrina, I think it's him. So let's carry on with that conversation. Enjoy. After Mitch Landrieu, we have LaToya Cantrell, who is the first black woman mayor of New Orleans.
Yeah.
Now, as you have explained to me, unfortunately, that didn't mean necessarily that that was good news for black locals in New Orleans.
No, because she closed most of our surviving communal black spaces. I mean, this is the same woman who wanted to open up a city hall in Congo Square, which is ancestrally tied to New Orleans and black communities.
And if you're a non-New Orleanian, that's just insane to think about. Congo Square is a national treasure. It's essentially where jazz was created.
1,000%.
In a super important social gathering space for the black diaspora of New Orleans.
And black, native, Latino, like what became a New Orleanian is what happened in Congo Square. It's directly because of the music that was birthed out of Congo Square, the people that were used Congo Square as a crossroads. I mean, everybody from the Houma Nation, Native Americans, all the way to our like most ancestral African, you know, displaced African, Cuban, you name it. Everybody came to Congo Square to create music together.
And so if you're looking for an elegant symbol of the Cantrell administration's cynicism towards local culture in this city, look no further than them trying to turn Congo Square into a new revenue stream for the city of New Orleans.
Yeah, a city hall.
Or look under the Claiborne Overpass.
Oh, man, that's such a heartbreaker. Claiborne Underpass is a well-celebrated black gathering spot. It was one of the last black gathering spots in the city of New Orleans. Back then, you didn't need a permit to throw a party in New Orleans. You could just throw a party. Now, yes, anybody driving through that area was terribly upset because they couldn't get across Claiborne Avenue, which is a main thoroughfare in the city. But I will get into in another episode, I'll get into how much of a detriment that underpass was when it was installed, because Claiborne used to be the Black Wall Street in New Orleans.
That's absolutely worth its own segment, yeah, because we're talking pre-Katrina history.
Oh, yeah. We're talking way, way before. We're talking the civil rights movement in New Orleans, right? And like the birthing of redlining.
But even since I have moved here, one of my major qualms with the Cantrell administration was them cracking down on street vendors.
Yeah.
Which is one of the backbones of New Orleans culture.
Yeah, food.
And to me, it just smacked of trying to whitewash the city's culture to make it more presentable for outside interests.
Yeah, because like who can afford a license to go sell food on the street when you'd been doing that? Maybe you'd been doing that ancestrally for the last 50 years. Well, after Katrina, you still had the last of the golden years in New Orleans before Mitch moved everything out and LaToya made everything illegal. You had those golden years where you could still just like do a pop-up gallery out of an abandoned shotgun double, or you could turn your house into a gallery and all the houses on this one thoroughfare would say, hey, every first Saturday in the month, we're going to be a gallery walk. And hence birthed the St. Claude Gallery Walk, which a lot of new people in New Orleans don't know. They came right after that was shut down by LaToya Cantrell. These kinds of things were the rebirthing and reinvigorating of culture in our city. This was what people that weren't from here were saying, hey, we respect the local culture and we want to pay it forward, because what we see is a lack of that. So we want to make safe spaces for marginalized communities to exist and sell their art. Something as simple as that. And we're not going to charge an admission, but we will have a donation bucket where you can grab a cup of wine and leave a donation. And so people once again figured out ways to make ends meet. They were figuring out a way to communally get everybody involved and everybody paid so nobody was upset. LaToya shut that down because she was like, nope, that is an unsanctioned gathering that if you don't have a permit for, you shouldn't be allowed to do.
Which is just, that's outrageous to call it that. Like, you could barely, I think, begin to discuss modern New Orleans culture, mm-hmm. like culture around things like Carnival and Super Sunday,
sure,
without discussing those gatherings down there.
Yeah.
And that was because of the pressure that she was receiving from gentrifying property owners in the surrounding neighborhoods.
People who moved to, like, the rear of the French Quarter and complained about noise.
Right. People that didn't have roots in those neighborhoods that suddenly decided that because they paid to be there, they could tell those neighborhoods how to act.
Oh, yeah. Right? And we're not talking about largely. These were people who had bought, like, McMansions on Britannia and decided to buy an investment property in Treme.
That's one aspect of the pressure that she was receiving. It was also, from my point of view, one of her major agendas during her administration was this prioritization of, like, large national events where we, yes, were on camera for the rest of the country. So
yeah,
when Taylor Swift came here to, uh-huh, put on her concert,
which garnered the city no money,
none, and yet we were swamped with Swifties for that, yep, entire time. When the Super Bowl passed through New Orleans,
once again, this was the first time we hosted Super Bowl and it was not lucrative for the city. What's crazy about that is we've hosted Super Bowl before and it was wildly lucrative.
When the lights were put on the bridge, right? And that's just and basically an investment scam from Jeff Landry, I should say.
Yes.
Overall, this fixation on trying to make the city some sort of palatable to,
sure,
people who don't live here, right?
Yeah, it was the complete rebranding of New Orleans and packaging it as attractive to people who weren't from here to own a piece of cultural history.
So then, to briefly summarize, pre-Katrina, very vibrant, thriving neighborhoods, despite the fact that most of the city was below the poverty line.
Yes.
Katrina happens. Several of those original culture bearers are displaced. The neighborhoods are disrupted. The economy is disrupted. The city becomes vulnerable to carpetbaggers, to,
yes,
people coming in, scooping up property, having no stake in the quality of life for the folks who live here. That outside investment money is prioritized by Mitch Landrieu, mm-hmm, who also leans hard into branding New Orleans as comfortable for outsiders, right?
Yes. Making New Orleans comfortable for white people to move here.
And watering down the gumbo, so to speak.
Yes, adding water to the gumbo instead of bone broth.
LaToya Cantrell gets elected, and the kindest thing that I can say is that we experience 8 years of stagnation. The more extended thing that I can say is that we had a mayor who was openly mismanaging and misspending city money, who was shutting down street vendors, who was breaking the back of local black culture.
Yes.
And we missed 8 years of opportunity where we could start to actually build back.
Oh, yeah. We're now 16 years behind on reforming what community was.
And the result is that there are still scars from Katrina all across this city.
Yes.
There's still a hospital downtown with the windows blown out.
I remember when the X drawn on the buildings to let you know who was alive and dead in a former abandoned home became t-shirt prints,
right? Like, it's like in vogue. Yeah.
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 And it became medallion pendants. And I just remember the gross over popularization of things that were meant to say, hey, a disaster happened here. Mm. One thing I saw a national company and brand do in the city that I loved, I went inside of a Starbucks in Lakeview, and they have a golden line painted on the wall, and it's where the water came up to in Katrina. And they did that to remind people that this was once underwater, to give you an idea that this city bounced back, but is it really back?
Am I still New Orleans if I can't second line? If my feet don't dance and my back don't bend and my hands don't clap to the beat and I like the heat of the summer or the smell of Jazz Fest? If I dance in the rain with the white folk in my Sunday's best? What if my pralines don't taste as sweet and I can't sew my Indian feathers on or catch falling beads? If I hate Bourbon Street or don't speak the way you speak or they speak? Am I still New Orleans? If I never felt super on Sunday? If I spend my Sundays passing out cranberry juice and communion crackers and singing high, watching the floor crack open only to see heaven inside? 'Cause watching children baptized, well, that was the most magic I ever saw on this side. Once made God look twice, well, then he'd leave to watch the steppers come outside. Tell me, am I still an Orleanian if I don't suck the head out the crawfish and lick the brown from the crack? Am I still worthy of gold beads around my neck if I only cried once at a Saints game? Am I still considered a fan if I don't bleed black and gold and carry a fleur-de-lis flag? Am I still seen as whole, a saint with a little too much sin on her hands? Am I still New Orleans if I can't make the rule? If my stew not as brown, if I never been to jeans, or listened to Q93, or spent a night at a hole in a wall, or stood still when they asked me to catch the wall, am I still New Orleans? If I don't like jazz, or listen to brass, or shake my ass, or loudly laugh, what if I can't shake, or cook, or bake, or make it to the second line, or ride on the lake 5 times? Or know my way, 'cause they say the city's a circle. Or don't know how to get on Broad and Royal. Am I still New Orleans? Am I still home? If I came back after the storm, if I didn't lose anything but my way.
Got on for the show, we fell down a lot of rabbit holes where we started listing off examples of things that have gone and haven't quite bounced back.
Yeah.
And, let's see if we can run through a few of those just to illustrate our point.
Well,
here.
I will definitely kick this off with mentioning the fact that during the Nagin administration, po' boys were about $5 for a roast beef po' boy.
A po' boy is a poor boy. It's supposed to be a cheap sandwich, right?
Very cheap sandwich. Roast beef is like the largest commodity we have, so you could get that. You used to be able to get that for a couple of dollars, like $2. But it went up to $5. That's fine. That's still very manageable.
But now the po' boy index has been raised to almost $15, $20 in certain parts of town.
$20 for... So back in the day, you used to be able to get a shrimp or oyster po' boy for about $7.25 or $8 tops. That's the most you were ever going to pay for that because it's seafood and basically became so popular and people stopped looking at it as bottom feeders. It drove up the price of it because the accessibility of it just... It went away because people were buying it up like crazy because it was so cheap. And this is poor people's food. Like,
right.
Seafood isn't something rich people ate. Rich people wanted, you know, the perfect cuts of beef and the prime cuts of beef and pork and chicken and et cetera, et cetera. The scraps and the seafood and the bottom feeders and the catfish and the crawfish and the shrimp, those are all bottom feeders. So that's what black people used to eat because it was so accessible.
And then what's beautiful and amazing is that they take these ingredients that are often considered, like, throwaway ingredients, and they throw this incredible technique into it to make it as delicious as possible.
Melt-in-your-mouth delicious. And they put it in between in between a loaf of French bread, and they call it a poor boy. which we shortened for po' boy.
Right.
So po' boys became popular in New Orleans, and that became like the official way to eat a pot roast on the go. And in that culture, in that development of culture, it was always ridiculously cheap to buy because it was the most affordable meal on the go you could possibly buy.
You also attributed that part of the reason that the po' boy index has been raised is because a lot of the corner stores that used to be a cornerstone of culture in New Orleans, a lot of those have gone away.
Oh, yeah. Corner stores started closing left and right, so that left stores you wouldn't generally see po' boys on a menu. Suddenly, po' boys were on the menu. Because people kept saying, where do I get a po' boy? They come into this fancy restaurant and go, well, where do I get a po' boy? Now you can get a po' boy at Mr. B's, which you never back in the day. You can get a po' boy at Antoine's, which you could never back in the day. Because these places realize, oh, there's a need because there's no more little corner stores, even in the French Quarter.
Right. The French Quarter, most corners are Willie's Fried Chickens now.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, what we saw happen in New Orleans was we watched a po' boy go from being wildly affordable to now. So I attribute the po' boy index to the rise in the po' boys and the cost of po' boys. We call it the po' boy index. I attribute that to our mayoral leadership at the time. The last days of cheap po' boys were during the Nagin administration. So that's Katrina happens. The city gets a reset and it's rebranded as NOLA all of a sudden, right? Well, people were flocking and buying up everything. Corner stores were closing, so they couldn't get po' boys everywhere anymore. And all of a sudden, the po' boy inched up a little bit in cost because you had to drive a little bit further to get it, and the ingredients were now in demand, so there weren't as many roast beef po' boys that you could sell in a day. And I'm using roast beef because that was really the cheapest one, right? So I watched during the Landrieu administration, the po' boy took a huge jump, went from being like $5 to a whopping $7 and a quarter, which was crazy for a roast beef because it's roast beef. You could buy a pack of Mando roast beef for a little and nothing, and now all of a sudden it's $7 at Jean's Po' Boys, which does not exist anymore, by the way.
Yeah, speak to that. Speak to Jean's. That's a great illustration.
So Jean's was a neighborhood institution and a po' boy institution at the corner of Elysian Fields and St. Claude. And that was a corridor that was densely black. That's the end of the French Quarter and the beginning of what is now called the Marigny Bywater area. And that area was like a lot of foot traffic back in the day because those are two major bus routes. So there's major bus stops on both corners. So heavy foot traffic and a lot of people. So having a po' boy shop there, you're catering to everybody in that neighborhood, which is a giant corridor. So everybody would converge on Jean's because it was just the most central location for you to get a po' boy if you didn't live uptown.
And so Jean's isn't around anymore.
No. Jean's went up for sale because the owner of Jean's, Gene, he was tired. He wanted to retire. None of his family wanted to carry on the business. And thankfully, Jean's was bought by another local who ended up opening up Baldwin & Company, which is a beautiful cafe and bookstore. So he turned this like neighborhood staple into a new neighborhood staple. It's a bookshop named after a well-known, recognized black historian and civil rights activist named James Baldwin. And he opened up a beautiful cafe with a bookstore and then a bar, an art bar. So he rents it out for different reasons. And maybe he'll have like events there, but then it's a bar with a lot of art in it. So it's called an art bar.
So then this is an example of a local business being replaced by a new local business, right? The money stays in the city and the culture rolls on. You look at the other side of that spectrum and you look at Popeyes. Can you speak to Popeyes and what it used to be?
Yeah, Popeyes used to be a local homegrown business, local to New Orleans, made by a New Orleanian named Al Copeland. He basically went bankrupt and sold all his restaurants to a national chain that franchised it and pushed Popeyes into all the American cities. Now, prior to that happening, Popeyes used to be very potent in our local chicken, I'll call it chicken royalty. Popeyes was the top of the chicken list. The best chicken you can get was from Popeyes, the most flavorful, the best fried. I can go on with the list of attributes that made Popeyes chicken so enjoyable. When it got picked up and franchised, water was added to the gumbo. So it became like this weird version of Popeyes that wasn't quite the same, didn't have the same potency. You suddenly got a two-piece spicy, and it tastes like it wasn't even seasoned, much less spicy. And it changed Popeyes. But by that time, you had Popeyes everywhere. I went to Chicago, and there was a Popeyes. I was living in the Middle East, and there was a Popeyes. So Popeyes was literally everywhere at that point. But it did not taste the same at all.
An example of New Orleans being used as a brand,
yes,
without really having reverence for the roots of that, of those symbols and that culture that it comes from. A lot of Popeyes have that like second story French Quarter looking balcony.
Uh-huh.
You can't even stand on it.
You can't even use it.
I think that's like that's such a perfect poetic symbol for a lot of how New Orleans culture is wielded around the rest of the world. Is that it is it's a flimsy, cheap knockoff of the real thing. It would be one thing if it was just that the chicken is less spicy, but this also has real effects on the people that live here.
Yeah.
We have seen a massive increase in the cost of living in New Orleans without the influx of good-paying jobs that sustain the people who live here being able to afford to continue to live here.
Absolutely.
We have seen the rise in cost of utilities to where the New Orleans area and Louisiana has some of the most expensive utilities in all of the United States. And we look at a company like Entergy, which is our local energy monopoly.
Yeah.
They have a CEO that makes millions and millions of dollars a year. And we still have a grid that fails anytime it gets a little windy outside.
You nailed it.
We have the school systems hollowed out and replaced by private schools and charter schools. So
yeah, that was also a big part of the rebranding of New Orleans to NOLA, was the influx of taking our Orleans Parish School Board and dismantling it and turning it into a bunch of independent charters. So then the charter school system was birthed. And that speaks definitely into defining the ideology of making New Orleans, instead of one big organization or one big entity, it was now a bunch of entities that came together as like NOLA.
So it's just this trend over the last couple decades of going from a city that neighbors took care of each other to a city where that attitude is slowly getting watered down. And a ton of outside interests have colonized quite a bit of the city and turned it into a watered-down version of itself.
And I think it's important to call it that as opposed to gentrified, because I think people, the ideology behind gentrification is like an influx of people that have bought up a bunch of the property in surrounding areas and turned it into their ideology of what a village is, right? And so that usually means like the murals and the cheap imitation of what the culture previously had been, just rebranded and whitewashed. However, there are some areas where gentrification isn't as evil as it's projected to be. So the connotations as opposed to denotations of gentrification would pretty much be defined as like progression versus marginalization, right? So when we're progressing, we're taking an area that is truly defunct, unincorporated, doesn't have infrastructure, barely has working streetlights, and we're going to now pour a bunch of money into it and bring the value of it up. We saw that happen in New Orleans in the Ferret Street corridor. That was like the great petri dish for America to try out this ideology of gentrifying an area. But it wasn't bad because we got progression out of it. And that was an area of the city that nobody was using. Let me make it clear. Very few people lived in that entire corridor, and they were happy to sell at market value, not below.
So I think what you're driving at is that we don't have any issue with money being invested in the city if it uplifts the lives of the people that live here, right?
That.
We were all excited about the Super Bowl because we thought that that would mean that it would lead
dollars.
To an increase in our quality of life here.
Oh, yeah. Roads were fixed. Like, let's be real.
Right.
Potholes were closed.
Yeah.
The streets were redone completely. Things became accessible. Streetlights started to appear that didn't have an existence before. So, like, we saw some great things happen because of the Super Bowl. The city got into its best, most beautiful shape.
It's not that we take issue with money coming into the city. Of course not.
No.
But if it doesn't uplift the lives of the people that actually live here, then that's colonization.
That's colonization. When you bring something to the table and your ideology of something to bring is changing the foundation, that's not supporting the local culture or the local economy. That's driving your own narrative in a place that didn't need your narrative. We love that you bring something to the gumbo. We just have a very specific list of things to put in it.
Yeah, thank you for bringing the andouille, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But you brought the andouille.
Right,
you
yeah.
didn't bring your German blood sausage.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you brought andouille because you knew that was on the list. So you can bring a plethora of andouille, and we appreciate your brand of andouille, but it's still andouille at the end of the day.
Which, in so many words, leads us to speaking about some things that we would prescribe to folks for ways that they can defend New Orleans culture. And if you come to visit us, what you you can do to make sure that your money is going towards supporting the folks that live here and keeping this place special, right?
Yeah.
So to begin with, when we were having this discussion in preparing for the show, I asked Daniel, what do you think is the most important thing in trying to protect the culture of this city?
Being a neighbor, preserving and protecting black spaces specifically. Miss Cantrell, she made it her mission to shut down accessibility to black spaces, historic black spaces in the city, by black people occupying them. That's the opposite of what we want in this city. When you kick black people out of their own spaces, you're now creating space for other people to be there. And we've seen that happen. Even if we're just going to talk about the birth of Fried Chicken Festival. When Fried Chicken Fest started, it was in Lafayette Square. Instead, they changed the area and they moved it out to the lakefront, which speaks volumes on its own because that's a densely white populated neighborhood. So you took it from a city epicenter where anybody could pretty much just catch the bus and walk to a remote neighborhood that you have to drive to. So now you're talking about two different demographics, right? So as opposed to serving everybody in the city, including the people who are participating in the fried chicken competition, you're excluding so many people by putting it on the lakefront because you're repackaging your own festival and saying, well, we want to draw this demographic.
So then, yeah, that is all to say that this is a majority black city. The things that make New Orleans culture special come from black culture.
Everything you love about New Orleans is because of black people.
Yes, yes. And if you don't protect those spaces, then New Orleans will continue to become watered down, which coincides with something that we have talked about a lot, which is be a good neighbor. Get to know your neighbors.
Yeah. All you have to do is introduce yourself. Like Will said, when he was living in a neighborhood short term, his neighbor came and introduced herself and gave him a contact card and asked him if he was going to evacuate for the storm or not, and told him where to get resources in the event of power outage and inaccessibility of EMS or any other first responder. And that's what you do in your neighborhood. You get to know your neighbors so that you can watch each other's backs. It's that simple. As well as, hey, if you ever need anything, let me actually be a neighbor. Let me help you out.
I want to underscore the importance that I hold as a transplant to listening to culture bearers and not getting in front of the parade and telling this city what it is and what our culture means, right? I think that it is so important that I hang back, that I listen, and that I be a steward of this city's culture. So all of that is to say, our culture bearers are incredibly important, mm-hmm. and they need to be uplifted and protected.
Yeah. And it's that is also vital to the preservation of New Orleans and not NOLA, right? Yeah, it's what's most interesting about the rebranding is that it's wildly rejected by most people that are from here, that grew up here and were born and raised here, and accepted by transplants.
So in the spirit of protecting our culture bearers, protecting our neighbors, also just paying attention to local issues and participating in local elections, volunteering with nonprofits that do good work in the city to protect those neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to the New Orleans Musicians Clinic, which helps make healthcare accessible to musicians that live and work in this city. New Orleans would not be New Orleans without its musicians.
And absolutely not.
It is hard to make a living as a musician anywhere. It helps lower the economic barrier for those folks to stay in this city and continue to create their art here.
Absolutely.
Organizations like the Broadmoor Improvement Association, mm-hmm. which offer free resources for folks in the Broadmoor neighborhood and the surrounding area, uplifting the quality of life for everybody who's there. Right?
Have you been to that little house community center they have?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it great?
It's amazing. They offer free counseling.
They do.
They have free classes. I'm actually thinking of going over there to volunteer myself.
Oh, that's awesome. Do it.
Also just paying attention to local politics and local elections. Mm-hmm. I am really heartened by the turnout from this most previous election that we
Same.
Had for the mayoral election in 2025.
Let me explain just real quick how important it was that Helena Moreno won. Helena Moreno convinced Republicans to vote for a immigrant Latina woman.
And while still being really explicit about her progressive policies, not moving towards the center, which
that,
is a failing strategy every single
while
time.
While saying I'm still wildly liberal.
Right.
But she got Republicans locally to vote for an immigrant Latina.
Because she appealed to what actually affects people's lives.
She got Republican dollars from people who are currently violently deporting Mexican immigrants. And she's a, I'll say it one more time, immigrant Mexican lady. And what we've got out of our national support team right now is chaos. So it's nice to know that a little place like New Orleans can exist where people can still come together and add to the gumbo pot.
Everybody, well, not everybody, but a large number of citizens participating in local elections means that our interests are better represented.
1,000% yes.
And it fills me with optimism that maybe this city can start to round a corner and really start to live up to its history of caring for its neighbors and having such a special and vibrant culture. I think that the line these days is that New Orleanians are really tired of being described as resilient.
Yeah.
Because what that means is, wow, you're willing to put up with a lot of BS.
That.
Huh? Yeah. No, we're all exhausted.
Tired.
And this is a city of the world and deserves to be treated as such. And that a really important foundation for that is for locals to participate in local elections.
Living here. Because how could you affect change when you don't know what needs to be changed?
Time to get it on. See you dancing on the floor, that's your favorite song. I know the sound of the horns got your mind gone. We didn't hit you with a vibe, now your mind blown. I know it's hard to stay calm when you hit this. Your head get the vibe.
happen and your body start to feel it. Yeah, it's getting even harder to conceal it. The feeling is contagious, everybody is my witness. A vibe too strong, you know we gon' provide. Delete the stress, the drama in your life. Put your worries and your cares aside. Don't let them kill your vibe, I know they try. This the groove, I know they can't deny. The feelings got you feeling right tonight. Party hard, cause everything's alright. Get back, relax, and just enjoy the ride.
Softly, and it's me, yeah.
soul. You're the light in my deepest, darkest hour. You're my savior when I fall.
Y'all help us. How deep
is your love? How deep is your love? I really mean to learn. Cause we're living in a world of fools breaking us down when they all should let us be. We belong to you.
One more time for Yebba.
Secreto de darse completo a las manos del tiempo a la altura de verbos. Están los canales abiertos, pero mira atentos. Se confunden los verbos, se estera, los sueños invaden espacios que no lo sabemos. No mientan, no mientan, me asustan los cuentos. A veces olvidamos los buenos momentos y dejamos colgados nuestros sentimientos. Qué equivocado. Prefiere que espere, que cocine, que fríe. Pasé son las mujeres. Fui tu nena, rapera, tu asusto, embeleso. Y tú con tu socio maltratando el cuerpo. Y tú con tu socio maltratando el cuerpo. Y tú con tu socio gastando el dinero. Qué equivocado.
Equivocado tú estás de la vida, mi amor, que equivocado.
pasado. Tú sabes el trabajo que me ha costado. La bendición que Olofi a mí me ha dado. Niño, tú sabes manejar, arranca y vete. Te has equivocado de lado a lado. Mal acostumbrado. Reguete mal acostumbrado. Se te ha bozado. Recoge y vete, desgraciado. Hijo de Dios. A mí hay que quedarme como una reina. Hay que tratarme con cuidado. Equivocado. Mal acostumbrado. A ti no te basta con todo lo que yo he pasado, mi hermano. Se agarra y sigue enganchado. A machete, díselo. Desfasado. Igual a equivocado.
Your poetry in motion. If I'm being honest with you. You're making me blush. You're making me blush. You're making me blush. You're making me blush. Hands and butter. You gotta let them go before they tell you all the things you need to know. Your poetry in motion, if I'm being honest with you.
Take my time looking, I rush to save. I go from
from a misbelief oak tree in New Orleans with some crawfish in my family. Talking about boy crushes and Master P. And you roll off my tongue like a red frozen cup. And I don't play stuck up like them other ones. Oh, I don't play stuck up like them other ones. No time to front when I am the front woman. You are beautiful guy, beautifully I write these poems when I see you tried. I still can't deny the sun when I rise. I'm thinking about you. Let you know my time don't waste. I simply spend it on you. Got me feeling like da 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 da. Da, 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 da. I wrote this poem about you. I wrote this poem, this poem, this poem, this poem.
This is Dancing Man 504 from New Orleans, Louisiana. You are listening to 102.3 WHIV, baby. Nobody beats them. Nobody.
This is 102.3 FM WHIVLP New Orleans, powering the airwaves with social justice and human rights since 2014.
Greetings, New Orleans. Welcome to the 504 Underground Music Show. I'm your host, Steve Wattstyle, and I'll be taking you on a journey through time with some vintage underground music from New Orleans, right here on WHIVLP 102.3 FM New Orleans.
Saying when the music stopped, rock me daddy, oh daddy, oh rock. I say rock, rock, rock me daddy, oh 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 rock me daddy, don't stop. I say rock me daddy, oh daddy, oh rock. Jukebox are jumping clean off of the floor. The gals all are hollering more, more, more. Every time you hear a nickel drop, you say to rock me, daddy, oh, daddy, oh, rock. I say rock, rock, rock me, daddy, oh, 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 rock me, daddy, don't stop. I say rock me, daddy, oh, daddy, oh, rock. Dig his beat. Now I was kind of slow catching on, but when I got it, I was real gone. Every time you hear a nickel drop,